This podcast is sponsored by The Knowledge Website, a digital digest that cuts through the noise. Brought to you by the founder of The Week, John Connell. Every day, The Knowledge gives you all you need to know in just 5 minutes, delivered straight to your inbox or to your app. Sign up for free at theknowledge.com to get the most interesting ideas, the stories that matter, and the quirkiest anecdotes, all expertly curated.
Hello and welcome to a special Saturday edition of Coffee House Shots. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Kate Andrews and Fraser Nelson, and we're back to our favourite topic on the podcast, which was who was right about the June 21st delay when it comes to that roadmap. Was it Kate or was it Fraser? We've had a few discussions on this, Kate, but to begin, we celebrated so-called Freedom Day on Monday by going to the Blue Ball across the road, and a lovely man, a listener on this podcast, came over and he said something to you, so why don't you share that?
Yes, a delightful man, an avid listener of Coffee House Shots, came over to say hello, which was legal on Monday. That was delightful that he could come up and, you know, not be socially distanced. And Katie can vouch for this. One of the first things he said was, "Kate, I thought it was outrageous that your boss, Fraser Nelson, went on Coffee House Shots and said basically that he was proven right about the delay, and he did so when you were out of the office to not give you a chance to reply." And I said, yes, it is absolutely outrageous. I have messaged him about this, and I'm delighted to hear that our listeners are just as frustrated with his actions as I was.
No. And you also did want to write a reply, but we decided not to have that as a soloist, instead bring the two of you together so you could just talk about it one more time.
And let's be honest here. It means that Fraser's always going to have the one up. It means my arguments and my debate has to be even better and even stronger. But I'm a little bit hungover, if we're going to be honest, but I'm also looking forward to this debate because I suspect that we're going to discover that Fraser, at the end of the day, was just a bit wrong.
So, Kate, do you want to kick things off by replying to Fraser's right to reply?
Wait, does Fraser get a word in edgeways?
No, Fraser's welcome to start. I'm happy to be magnanimous on that.
Right, well first off, I think we're not exactly ganging up on you last week. Eh? I mean, basically, you know, I should let our listeners know.
No, of course you weren't. I wasn't there.
Yeah, exactly. Kate was at a lunch, and I'd even walked Kate to the lunch over the park, and I knew she wasn't coming back.
And yeah, you did.
So we come back, and James and I were just talking about things. We were just throwing it in the middle, by the way, and I just threw in, by the way, 21st of June. I feel very vindicated over that, right? And then, of course, Kate texts me, "What are you saying? You're going to regret saying that." So I'm delighted.
I did not threaten him, I'll restate
my case. Right now, I basically agree with Kate about the undesirability of lockdowns, about the huge collateral damage which they cause, and about how it was perfectly safe to open on the 21st of June. I don't think it would have led to any greater infections. I don't think it would have moved the dial that much, really, on infections, because society had reopened so much. Now, I know, Kate, you'll be saying there are several important things we couldn't have done. Specifically, we couldn't have had the spectator party last night, from which you say you're suffering the effects this morning. But so these things are great, and they're really important, and re-socialization and renormalization is important as well. But that was never my argument. My goal, my dream is the same as yours. It is basically to re-liberalize society. But, Kate, your cover piece this week illustrates all of the reasons politically what happens if you reopen society before you're ready. Now, on the 21st of June, something had changed. The Delta variant just came along and nobody was quite sure what it was going to do. But the roadmap was designed at a time where the government thought it would be game over, COVID-wise, by the 21st. All their studies suggested that it would slowly be crushing the wave, and by the time reopening came, there wouldn't be anything else. Now, when the Delta variant came, a very different scenario was on there. That had we opened on the 21st of June, the models were showing that there would have been not much COVID for 2 or 3 weeks, and then all of a sudden, a huge wave, bigger than the second wave. Right now, if had we proceeded, the government was willing to basically say everything's fine, great, Freedom Day, etc. That was the wrong message, because had we done that and the Delta variant had picked up as it has done now, people would be saying, look, this is the result of reopening. There would be pressure for locking down yet again. So I think if a government reopens when it isn't politically ready to do so, that means it stands a far greater chance of getting pushed either into another lockdown or into where we are right now, which I think in many ways is actually worse than the lockdown we just exited. It was so-called Freedom Day on Monday, but look at where we are now. We're in a system where the government is thinking about having vaccine passports, even for those who test negative, basically harassing the unvaccinated, targeting young people, coming up with a whole bunch of measures which might never go away because they are politically unprepared to how to deal with the notion of a third wave, which is rising as fast as it is. Never sometimes that there are some signs it might have plateaued now. Who knows? We might be having a very different view in the next couple of weeks' time. But I would rather that we had continued with the last under the our pre-Freedom Day conditions. I would rather we were right now in that phase of lockdown than that we were released into a freedom that isn't. We are in limbo now. Now, one of the advantages to a lockdown is that you're explicit about the sacrifices you're asking of the country, and there is an end date to these things. This is bad, but it's going to end on this day. To my mind, that is preferable because it's transparent than what we're into now, which is a regime of soft lockdowns, of harassment. And that is why I think we were right to delay the 21st of June, because if we hadn't, there'd be lots of pressure for a new lockdown right now.
I agree with so much of what Fraser has just said.
Great. Thank you for listening to this podcast. You can subscribe
to Coffee House. I'm going to reframe it in a slightly different way. I'm delighted to hear, Fraser, that you agree that it would have been safe based on the data to open up the 21st of June. I do seem to recall at the time you had much bigger question marks around that. I appreciate we're discussing it in retrospect.
You're right,
but
because
it
at
is
the time,
it
wasn't entirely. We now know, we can now far. I mean, by waiting, right, we have earned ourselves the right to say that we are fairly confident that hospitalizations will not overthrow the NHS. We couldn't have said that on the 21st of June because there wasn't quite enough
evidence. Scenarios at the time and the data that was coming in, I think, was broadly supportive of saying that. It might have
been loosely, but not strongly.
It might have been a bit more bold, but no, I think that was there. I think 4 weeks before we reopened, there was a clear break in infections and hospitalization. But I'm delighted that we now both agree that it would have been safe to open up on the 21st of June. The cover piece this week does talk about what happens when government reopens society and hasn't properly communicated.
Yeah, it's about a freedom that isn't, right?
Right to reply. And it strikes me that the government, in the best case scenario, having delayed for 4 weeks, would have used that time to communicate to the public, cases are going to go up, and they would have reformed their test and trace system so we wouldn't be experiencing pingdemic. They would have been working with businesses to help encourage customers to go back to their old ways to overcome the fears. Instead, they got spooked by the rising number of cases, which I always suspected they would. Their narrative became extremely negative. Sajid Javid tried for about a week to convince people of this, and then the Prime Minister's rhetoric overshadowed that. And we got to a place where on Freedom Day, they had not at all made the case for going back to our lives and living with risk. The Prime Minister was lambasting young people for daring to go to nightclubs to enjoy the freedoms he had just restored. He was talking about how he is going to bring in vaccine passports. He was talking, as you say, Fraser, about a limbo that we're now going to live in which freedom, we don't know when it will properly be restored. And this was always my fear, and this is what I said back in whenever it was that they delayed a few weeks ago.
Okay, out of interest, is this preferable? Is our current situation preferable to what we had before Monday?
I was the one saying weeks back that if you delay the 21st of June, everything is now on the table when it comes to delaying freedoms, to keeping restrictions, and to bringing lockdown back in. It was only days after they decided to delay that you had Chris Whitty talking about how we might need restrictions back as early as September, how you now have JVT talking about bringing back restrictions in the winter. I cannot separate in my mind, I cannot disconnect the delay to Freedom Day and the Prime Minister's decision to usher in vaccine passports in a very radical way. Once they delayed real Freedom Day, the 21st of June, when they said they would give us our liberties back, it gave them in their minds permission to start delaying a heck of a lot more. And I agree with you, Fraser, that the world that we're living in now is so far from ideal. I would prefer, I'm with you, for some restrictions to still be in place if it meant that we knew the day that they all lifted. But as soon as we gave them that inch, they obviously took a mile, as they've done so many times in this pandemic. And I really did appreciate and understand why you had a lot of good faith towards them several weeks back when they decided to delay, because you thought that they might actually make this case. But they didn't make the case. And unfortunately, I think my cynicism has been validated and justified because they've done something that you and I personally think is despicable. They sold us freedom. Then we gave them this delay, gave them a bit more time as they asked. And what did they do? They ushered through the door some of the most illiberal policies we've heard, not just from this government throughout lockdown, but possibly that we've heard in decades from any government. I mean, they're talking about taking away our liberties indefinitely. In my mind, I cannot separate the powers that they're trying to claim from that original decision to delay Freedom Day. And it's cynical, but I don't think the government deserves that good faith, not anymore. And frankly, not when they delayed Freedom Day.
I think, Kate, you're right in saying that where I was wrong was I thought that you would use those 4 weeks to deconstruct the old narrative, great, COVID is gone, let's liberalise, which was, by the way, incorrect. And in my mind, it was calamitously incorrect. If they'd have gone liberalised on 21st of June and said, like, we have vanquished COVID, and we'd ended with a third wave, it would look like a complete repudiation of decision to unlock, and we need a new lockdown, right? I had thought that they would adjust to the Delta variant quicker than they did. And they would be saying, I mean, I thought Sajid Javid was actually coming close to it. When he became health secretary, I thought, right, this is exactly what I hope they need the space for. Because he was saying, look, tests are 40,000 now, but they could hit 100,000 a day. I thought that was very good and honest of him because people needed to be prepared. So when they saw the number of COVID cases hitting through 100, perhaps 150,000, they would not think things are going wrong. And one of the things which we in the Spectator Data Hub show a lot is the projections, the expectations. The public can't see that. All you can see every day is just the numbers going up. And there's no kind of visibility. Nobody really knows, is this more or less than expected? Is this sign of the plan going right or wrong? That context is lost. You can only find it in the Spectator Data Hub. No newspaper publishes that. When I thought the government's rhetoric was getting more in line with the expectation of a surge in cases but very small hospitalisation things, I thought, good, that's going in the right direction. But then it didn't. It basically stopped. And talking to a lot of people in government now, I am struck by a couple of things. I think that Sajid Javid's great momentum of his first week has basically run into some sand in number 10. And I think that the Rishi Sunak live without fear narrative, which again was got going, I forget, was it last July or something like that? And I thought Rishi and Sajid, I still think that Sunak and Javid together can come up with a strong live without fear narrative. But they have not been able to overcome the kind of witty sage axis of having, and the fight, the message, the struggle of the Department of Health is coming out now, is that Matt Hancock had an agenda there of trying to get people to obey with the regulations and laws. So therefore, all the information pumped out was with a view to basically scarifying the population, of making people worried about what was around the corner, of making people more likely to obey government regulations. Sajid Javid is trying to build a reassurance narrative, thinking it's okay to go out there, which is what we needed. But the reassurance narrative was not ready for the 19th of July. As a result of it not being ready, we're now getting all of these liberal things. So perhaps, this is where you and I will disagree now, is that I would have preferred to have delayed the 19th for another 2 weeks, 3 weeks, if I thought that you could have got a reassurance narrative ready. In other words, that the government could tell everybody to expect rising cases, rising hospitalizations. But I will tell you some of the benefits, some of the hard benefits of waiting to delay. Nobody, I think, really can look at the surge in cases and think, that's because we unlocked. The surge in cases started 2-3 weeks ago. They would have been able to say, if we opened on the 21st of June, that's because we'd unlocked. The correlation and causation would have been there. So I think that, to me, that does actually vindicate my position at the time, because that's exactly what I was worried about. What I've since got more gloomy about is just how the government itself just doesn't quite realise the dramatic nature of the steps that it's taken. As far as the government concerns, these are relatively baby steps, you know, from saying we're not going to have vaccine passports to yes, we are, but you're using to travel abroad, to saying yes, we might use them, but negative tests. You know, we've now slipped to a policy of all-out harassment, for young people anyway, which the government regards as liberal because it's better than lockdown. Now, I am really struck by how people are now adopting positions that would have appalled themselves had they taken them 18 months ago. And I think this is a real problem we're in now. That's why we've done the cover on this. It's a great cover image of this Gatsby-esque kind of party with Boris Johnson basically wanting to vaccinate you before you go in.
Kate, Fraser makes the important point about how the conversation has changed about vaccine distribution across the world, obviously wealthier countries prioritising their own people. But I suppose going back to 21st of June, 19th of July, one of the issues here is we got so-called Freedom Day on Monday, and by about 5 p.m. that day, we were getting announcements actually adding lots of caveats on talking about nightclubs, also some exemptions on the pingdemic, on who's getting pinged. Do you think one of the issues here is because it was actually delayed, by the time we got to the 19th of July, cases were already so high that it's led to more panic? And perhaps if you had gone 21st of June, seeing as we're saying, well, cases were going up anyway, it would have had more time to keep things open before number 10 panicked.
I think that's right. I think that number 10's panic in those 4 weeks has led to a far greater limbo than what we might have had before, one in which the government is U-turning from saying vaccine passports will be voluntary for companies to within days saying actually we're going to force them in the autumn. So I think you see the government wobble, but I also think you see the consumer wobble, because around the 21st of June, the 7-day average for cases was under 10,000, around 10,000. And then when we reopened, it was much closer to 40,000 a day. Sorry, 7-day rolling average. And, you know, that is obviously going to change customer behavior. I wonder, had we reopened on the 21st of June, people had gotten out there with cases rising, they might have realized, actually, this is manageable, this is a risk that we can bear, and they would have continued to go about their daily lives, realizing that that link between infection and hospitalization had been quite significantly diminished. But then when you hear that there are 40,000 cases a day, you are going to be more inclined to roll back your behavior. I spoke to Kate Nichols, who is the CEO of UK Hospitality, for the cover piece, and I wasn't able to include all of her brilliant insights, but she did mention to me that, you know, on top of the vaccine passports and all the things that could hit profitability, she thought that because of the government's language going into Freedom Day, a lot of people were still holding back their normal consumer behavior. Now, it's hard to gauge that, right? Because, you know, people were locking down before the government mandated it in the first lockdown. People will sort of read the news and make their own judgments. But there really is something in the fact that if the government had been able to seize the narrative and say, this is our exit strategy, we know cases are going up, it's part of the plan, we have so many scenarios on this, we think it's time to do it. If they'd really championed that, I think it could have had a really positive impact on consumers and on the economy more widely. So, you know, the government just feels very lost. They feel very easily spooked. It's frightening to me that these people, a lot of these people anyway, are in charge of an exit strategy that they were never able to champion. And, you know, we are all the victims of that. And I don't want to overstate this. Like, obviously, this week has been much better than any week I had in February. But as Fraser says, we are now entering into this unknown period where liberty has not been restored, and yet Freedom Day has passed. And I think that's what's very scary, is we're going to have to be grabbing and clawing for our freedoms for them to come back, rather than to have these restrictions lifted as promised. And if I may just say one more small thing. I said, I think in my first remark, that if we had opened on the 21st of June, it would have been safe to do so. Now, I said that to a few ministers at our party last night, and they really jumped on it. You know, no, it's not safe. And I've been reflecting on that because, you know, the way they're using the word safe and the way I'm using the word safe are very different. I'm using it in the old sense, where obviously everything in life has risks. Everything in life has risks. But we didn't go around talking about other viruses or most other viruses as if it wasn't safe to go about our daily lives. And at one point with COVID, it wasn't. Significantly more contagious than flu, more deadly as well. But these vaccines are a game changer, and it is worrying to me that ministers and people making decisions are still using that new term of safety, which is essentially, this comes first. When in doubt, be more cautious, regardless of the health impact, the economic impact, the social impact that it's having on every other aspect of our lives, apart from the COVID virus. And so, you know, I find that one really hard. How are we going to return to that old sense of safe, which is never that you're completely safe? We should be honest with people about the risks. But you know, it kind of starts to move into playing down the vaccines because they really do work. And I think we have to get back to that old version of safe.
I should probably say, in defense of some of the other ministers that were there, that there were also people who agree with you, Kate. I remember talking to one minister who was saying...
That was delightful as well.
Yeah, the we have to remember that cars aren't safe. You know, people die on the roads, etc. We have to get back to the old notion of risk. So I do think there is a hunger there. And when you're trying to work out, like, where does Boris Johnson stand on this? Because if you listen to the Dominic Cummings leaks, he portrays somebody who is basically a liberal, who, if he was on this sofa now, would probably be agreeing with you, Kate. That's the image of Dominic Cummings. WhatsApps, but you know, from my own inquiries, I find that he has genuinely been in sort of two minds. I mean, his style is to, when he's trying to debate something, is to take sort of almost the extremes of both positions, argue them out openly amongst his colleagues, and just see the reaction. So, if you were to take an isolated Boris Johnson quote out of context, you could probably make any argument you wanted.
Yeah, but that one where he said he would rip up his ID card and eat it is very difficult to take out of context.
Well, yeah, because he was very consistent over a great number of years about ID cards. But right now, it's, you know, the problem where they are now, I think, is thinking to themselves, look, this is bad, but it's only going to be needed for a certain amount of time. All we need to do is scare the young into getting the jab and everything will be fine. In other words, they're basically saying this is going to be an emergency situation in a limited period of time. Looking back, I think I made a mistake in going along with that logic, because I think I took them at the word a bit much. What we've seen is that these emergency powers are extended. Right now, Britain is being run under emergency powers by a government when there is no more emergency. Now, this is exactly the argument for not granting emergency powers in the first place. So, you know, maybe it's the case that if we'd extended the, you know, previous lockdown things right through to September, we would never have got into the position where I would like us to be, where the government is saying it's now time to live with the risk of the virus, because that's not where the government is. So maybe an extension wasn't all that we needed. But I do think that the facts are far stronger now than they were pre-21st of June to say, but look at Scotland, its peak has gone down now. Scotland's a few weeks ahead of England. Hospitalizations didn't get to even a quarter of where they were before. There is no threat to the NHS. Things are safe. But the almost zombie-like...
Well, not from COVID anyway.
Well yeah, right. Exactly. Things are as safe as
nearly
ever.
Buckles every year.
I think the NHS is not not a threat. That to me... The only moral justification the government has to constraining people's liberties is if they think the NHS is under collapse. Once that risk is removed, that's it. There's no more justification to constrain what anybody else does. But I've got... This is a feeling which the argument, I think... This is an argument I think is steadily being lost.
And with that, thank you, Fraser. Thank you, Kate.